your last name? It's Mitchell...
Szczepańczyk.
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 Third time's the charm. Szczepańczyk.
Mitchell.
Very good.
Okay, good. That's quite a name. Wow.
Thank you. I studied long and hard to try to get a name that creative and unique.
What's the good, the bad, and the ugly of digital technology and how it's affected our minds, our ability to learn and communicate? Joining me right now is Mitchell Szczepańczyk, host of a radio program, WHBK Radio.
Too often, broadcast radio insults your intelligence, but not here. This is radio that respects your intelligence and challenges you to think and rethink. Where knowledge is power, this is powerful radio. This is 30 minutes of information and inspiration. This is the Ministry of Truth. Hello, and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Szczepańczyk. In this episode, we'll feature an interview with Loretta Capehart, a professor at Northeastern Illinois University in Chicago, who has found herself struggling against her own university and how the efforts to silence her have chilling implications for free speech and free expression in Illinois and nationally. The following interview was recorded on Sunday, September 2nd, 2012. We are joined on the phone with Loretta Capehart. Loretta Capehart is a longstanding political activist, trade unionist, and university professor. She is on the faculty at Northeastern Illinois University, NEIU, here in Chicago, and she is joining us on the phone. Loretta, thank you for your time today, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You've been involved with a bit of a struggle with your employer, Northeastern Illinois University, NEIU. Before we get into that, I'd like to ask you a little bit about your own personal background and your academic focus. What do you study and what do you teach?
I did my doctorate in sociology with a special attention on crime and criminology. And I teach justice studies, which is a fairly broad liberal arts degree dealing with all kinds of social justice issues, not just crime and criminality, but also like one of the things I teach is a white collar crime and elite deviance course, courses on theories of social change and how that comes through social activism, social movements. So that's sort of my focus in my academic career.
How long have you been on the faculty at Northeastern?
This is starting my 11th year. I've been there 10 years.
You also had been elected chair of the Justice Studies Department where you teach, but the department, well, while your colleagues at school had voted you with this honor, the administration apparently took issue with this. Can you talk a little bit about what happened?
Sure. As I said, I'd been on the campus at that point about 6-7 years. I'd already earned tenure, been there a long time, established myself as, an academic, a teacher, and excellence, and so forth, in order to be granted tenure. And I was elected to chair the department. But the administration had taken a very dim view of me, particularly the current president, Sharon Haas, and her provost, who has now left the university, Provost Frank, as well as another vice president who has also now left the university, mainly regarding my activism on campus. I'm a longtime activist against the war. I lost a nephew in the war in 2005 and had actually been active against the war from the day it started, knowing that, I was not the only person with loved ones at risk because of the war. But certainly had been especially active since my own personal loss. And the administration was very non-welcoming of activism against the war on campus, had threatened to arrest me at one point, threatened to take administrative action against me, all sorts of things for just, basically doing what people do without flyers. That's as egregious as my activism got, was handing out flyers, and they did not take kindly to that. And so they didn't see me as someone they wanted in that position. And this was one of the retaliatory acts they took against me because of my speech, was to refuse to appoint me as chair of the department. That hadn't happened on our campus in like 25 years. It's very normal that once you're elected by your peers that you will then be appointed.
To be frank here, you teach and have taught about and have studied political activism, and yet, you know, it seems like if you're allowed to do that and they pay you for doing that, even granting you tenure, and yet engaging in something is what probably has maybe not as much reach as handing out flyers to probably random passersby or at a rally or something. Why did the, I don't know if you can read into their minds or maybe they said so, why has the administration taken an approach that seems like would be more dovetailing with what you have done and taught rather than reacting irrationally here?
Yeah, I certainly have my views about that, and I think it's because of the corporate agenda that's taken hold in academia has become so intense of late. Our prior president, Salome Steinberg, probably wasn't my greatest fan, but she certainly didn't take this sort of punitive attitude toward me. But when the new administration came in, when Sharon Haas took the leadership role as the president, things on campus changed quite radically. Not just her retaliations against me, she actually tried to put in what she called a free speech code, which was so draconian that it was immediately rejected by the faculty senate. Now, of course, she made it clear to the senate that she could impose it without their approval, that she was just sending it by them for feedback. She ended up not imposing it, interestingly enough, because the outcry was so strong. The policy was actually quite similar to what Rahm Emanuel put in place just before the NATO conference, which was that there could be no rallies without prior approval. If you were going to hand out flyers, they had to be approved by the administration in advance. If you were going to carry signs, picket signs on the campus, they had to be approved by the administration in advance. And she tried to put this through during a time when our union was attempting to negotiate a contract. So it was clearly not just against, you know, the kinds of political activism like anti-war and pro-immigrant activism that we have on campus quite regularly, but also clearly aimed against the union rallies that we were organizing and holding at the time.
This again kind of smacks of Orwell, I suppose, where, in fact, I remember hearing that there's a saying the entirety of the United States is a free speech zone, or should be. I've been involved.
Exactly.
I've been involved myself in political efforts where I and others have been corralled into what have been euphemistically referred to as free speech zones. And which mm-hmm. would basically amount to places where basically to try to cover people who are willing to stand up to say what they believe and to stand up against repressive forces and try to sweep them under the rugs in one or another way. Go ahead.
I was going to say, we've had a free speech zone at Northeastern since I've been there. Now, there have been many people who've sort of resisted it and presented their speech in other areas, but the particular policy I was talking about earlier certainly was very clear in its limitations of when, not just where we could speak, but when we could speak. And on a campus that runs almost 24/7, because they're quite, anxious to get as many student dollars as they possibly can, they're not as anxious to allow voices that broadly, and so they had limited the times and the place that people could speak freely, which, again, as you say, is completely counter to what we expect in a so-called free country, where we should be able to speak freely anywhere we please without fear of retaliation or arrest.
And this kind of also connects into the issue with regards to freedom of speech on in education generally. You would figure that colleges and universities in the United States, in fact, anywhere, should be hubs of informed debate and where free exchanges of opinion can and should be encouraged to take place, and especially and including those opinions that for whatever reason might be deemed unpopular, whether or not people might find them abhorrent on... I hate to use the example, but I'll do it anyway. Those that basically align themselves with Nazi opinion, whereas those mm-hmm. that also might be aligned with perhaps those that you and I might more align with as far as those mm-hmm. that might be traditionally espoused with those in the political left, for example. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the AAUP has a very strong and clear statement on academic freedom and academic speech.
You're referring to the Association of American University Professors, AAUP.
Right, I'm sorry, the American Associate University Professors, and that's sort of the tradition within academia, that yes, this is where we discuss, this is where we debate, where we have these kinds of discussions and should be allowed these kinds of discussions. And while our current president, Sharon Haas, will say publicly that the AUP is the gold standard, she then will turn around and impose something that's totally contrary to the AUP's norms and expectations, which is why the AUP has been very supportive of me in my case, because they recognize that the stakes here are very much at the heart of academic freedom, which is at the heart of free speech and freedom, which is at the heart of democracy. And so these things are very clearly connected, and that a university president would stand against these things is absolutely despicable, and that she would do so at a campus like mine is truly outrageous, because Northeastern Illinois University, for people who may not know, is one of the most diverse campuses in the Midwest and the country, actually. Many of our students, I would guess the majority still at this point, even though things have changed recently, are first-generation college students, as was I, are working-class students, as was I, are minority students, as am I, speak something other than English at home, as do I, right? And so these are the kinds of students who are most in need of recognizing their potential, of recognizing their voice, and seeing a lead of that from the faculty, that, yes, what you say matters, you have a space to say it, and we should be very clear about it, right? 10% of our students are veterans, and that we can't feel comfortable to discuss the war on our campus is criminal, right? That we can't feel comfortable trying to protect our students from, you know, very active and aggressive recruiting on our campus is despicable. That I don't have the right as a faculty member to say, hey, you know, you should really consider these things before you sign up for the military. And then, of course, personally, this isn't just about what I feel is my obligation as a faculty member, but it feels it's my obligation as a Gold Star aunt that I need to say, you know, you need to think very clearly about what you're committing to if you're thinking about going into the military. And so there's, you know, that this is going on my campus, I find particularly offensive, because I chose to come to this campus because of the student body there, because I felt this is a place where my teaching and scholarship could really make a difference. And then to have that shut down by someone who really doesn't understand our student body is particularly heartbreaking.
On the issue of the administration and this kind of, I'll use another term for Orwell again, doublespeak, where they will say mm-hmm. one thing but do something dramatically different, sometimes the complete inverse of the opposite. Have the university administration, that of Sharon Haas and her staff, been held to account with regards to, you know, espousing the AAUP standard regarding freedom of speech on campus and yet enacting in these crackdowns?
Not directly. They have received some letters. They've also very recently refused to tenure one of my colleagues, an outstanding scholar, an outstanding teacher in our linguistics department, refused to grant him tenure because everyone else in his department voted no confidence in the president last year in the faculty senate. It's a clear retaliation. They've clearly used standards for review that are not included in the actual process that's very carefully constructed. This gentleman was passed through every level, from his department to the dean to the university personnel committee, and then in an absolute yes, you know, tenure and promote. This is an outstanding scholar, outstanding teacher, outstanding service to the university. And when it gets to the president's desk, she decides that she is not going to tenure this faculty member and gives him a year until he needs to vacate the university, which, again, it's despicable. And the AUP has reviewed that. I'm on the Committee A of the AUP in Illinois, which is the Committee for Academic Freedom and Tenure. And we were horrified by what is going on in that case as well, that here's someone who's done an outstanding job, is loved by his colleagues and his students, and yet the president, that high up, has decided not to tenure him for some reasons that are clearly not related to his work, not related to his review, and in the opinion of many, is because his colleagues openly voted no confidence in the president in our Senate meeting last year. So, yeah, there's been attention to the campus. I'm hoping there will be more because things are not getting better. And, of course, we fear that they'll get worse given the current political climate. And I don't know if you've heard about our campus radio station. The student campus radio station was also shut down without any due process. They call it the Wizards, WZRD.
WZRD, yes. I'm very familiar with it. I've actually been on the station myself a number of times.
Super. And those students were just basically shut down without due process, without any sort of understanding of what was going on. And they are also attempting to fight that, again, what they see as a violation of their rights as students on the campus. And given what I've seen of it, I have to agree with them that they have been, that their academic freedom has been violated, their rights as students have been violated. The whole process that's supposed to take place, if students actually do, of course, every now and then the student group will do something where there needs to be a response to it, but this is not what's happened here, and it's really despicable that because the campus seems to have decided that they want to corporatize that radio station, put in a bunch of podcasts, and run it from the top down, they first decide they've got to get rid of the student club in the current format. You know, again, without any real reasons or process. And that's totally, again, contrary to what the student radio station is supposed to be, is a student-run station run by the students. They decide if they want to go to a podcast format or if they want to keep what they've got. And it shouldn't be decided, you know, in some student affairs office and then imposed on the students. That's completely wrong, in my view.
And there's more to it than just that. It's not just students. WZRD has, as far as I've known the station now, almost 9 years, has had a very strong component of non-student participation and involvement to which the station should be credited, and which I fear might be lost if this crackdown might continue.
I think you're right.
The speaking of student clubs, you yourself have also received some heat with regards to your advising of a student club on Northeastern Illinois University campus. Tell us a little bit more about that and what's been happening with that.
Well, the Socials Club I had been the sponsor of since I came to campus almost back in 2002. And it was a very active club, again, with anti-war stuff. They were very active. When we used to have this really nasty homophobic group that would come to campus and hand out hate literature, and they were very active in putting up a response to that, along with the GLBTA group and the feminist majority and other groups on campus that were progressive. In 2007, there was an action by the anti-war club, which I don't sponsor or have any direct connection with them. Of course, I support their work. Had a very small demonstration against the CIA who'd come to campus to do some recruiting. And out of that peaceful demonstration, two students were arrested. And it just so happened that the two that were arrested were also members of the Socialist Club, which the university had long had a nasty attitude toward to such an extent that the dean of students once had to have one of his staff apologize because she was so nasty towards those students. It was a purely political issue. The students had never done anything wrong. But these two students who were arrested, I was very concerned and tried to get them released while they were on campus. They refused. They sent them over to the Chicago police, which I found horrifying. And they would not drop the charges, even though they were clearly unsubstantiated and outrageous. And because of that, attempts to support those students, the vice president of student affairs, in a meeting of faculty and other people, said that I should be careful what I say. What I was saying was, let's see if we can find a better way to deal with students than arresting them. And he said, I should be careful what I say because a student had filed stalking charges against me. Of course, I was horrified by that. I can't imagine how that could be. I'd never stalked anyone in my life, let alone a student. But he persisted in claiming that that was the case. About a year later, I was finally able to get access to what the heck he could possibly be talking about. I found that there were absolutely never any stalking charges against me. And he still refused to retract and apologize. And this is where things started getting really ugly, because clearly, had I been actually charged with stalking a student, that would be the end of my career, as it should be. You know, that sort of behavior shouldn't be tolerated on a college campus. I'd be the first to say that. But that wasn't the case. And yet the administration just kept clinging to that story and wouldn't apologize, wouldn't retract. I went through a whole grievance process on the campus in the works, and they just refused to back off that. And out of that grew this nasty characterization of myself and the socialist club as somehow creating problems and chaos on the campus. And there was an attempt even by the student government to have the socialist club thrown off the campus. Now, at the time, we had a really outstanding president of the club, and she defended them very well and got them to back off, because as she, you know, she clearly pointed out, this wasn't an action of the Socialist Club. Had it been, she would be just as vocal in defending, and she would defend the anti-war club, but that there was absolutely no reason to come after that club. But again, instigated from the top, that, you know, somehow I and this club need to be dealt with. When in fact what happened was there was a wrongful arrest, in my opinion, a wrongful arrest of students for engaging in peaceful protest on the campus. And so there's this creation of these crises that didn't have to be met with this top-down, you know, shut them down, shut them up, very similar to what's happening to WZRD now. The club has not remained active in recent years because the pressures and the retaliation had become so severe that I think many students didn't feel safe functioning on the campus.
There's another incident that I'd like to also discuss with you. I'm reading an excerpt from a website that's been organized to rally on your behalf, justiceforloretta.com, with the word for replaced with the numeral four, justiceforloretta.com. On that website, there's a portion of text that reads, on June 19, 2012, Cook County Judge Randy Kogan granted NEIU and Vice President Melvin Terrell immunity under the Illinois Citizens Participation Act, the CPA as it's called. Unless overturned on appeal, this ruling will make Professor Capehart liable for the university's legal tab, in addition to her own legal expenses. Ironically, the CPA was a piece of legislation fought for and won by consumer advocates in order to protect citizens who speak out publicly against powerful corporate and government interests. Now this ruling in Loretta's case turns the original intention of the CPA on its head by granting immunity to a powerful interest and leveling a terrible penalty on a citizen for speaking out. The precedent set for other citizen activists in Illinois is chilling. Any individual who speaks out against a corporate or government entity in Illinois could potentially be sued for slander and held liable for the corporation or government's legal tab. The decision could have a legal impact in other states that have passed or are considering consumer protection legislation like the CPA in Illinois. Hearing this and reading this, it sounds to me and echoes the rather draconian libel laws that they have in Britain, where the burden is on the person who actually gives the speech, even though it's not a freedom of speech issue. It actually, rather than a kind of innocent until proven guilty, you're guilty by default, and the situation is that you have to try to exonerate yourself somehow. Sometimes that may not even be possible. What are your thoughts in the case of all of this situation as you try to fight what's been going on with the CPA?
You know, it is really, you know, you used the word Orwellian earlier, and that is exactly what it is. It is so outrageous that I have a hard time. It's taken me months to really wrap my head around this and get a real, it's like, is that what happened? Because it's so outlandish. So again, the law was put into place to protect people exactly like me. So that if I were to say, hey, you know, I don't like the way this university is doing X, they couldn't sue me for saying that, as they shouldn't, right? I'm a citizen. I should have the right to, you know, be critical of my government or any of its entities and be safe in that. Now, what they've done is just completely turn that upside down. And because Melvin Terrell did slander me, it's slander per se in the law, meaning that he said something about me as if it were a fact, and if it actually were true, is very damaging to me, right? Just the fact of saying, you know, you are a sex felon. That's what stalking is. It's a felony sex crime. So he basically said that about me, a professor, that I had done that to a student. I can't imagine anything more damaging. And so he did slander me. And this is what the one of the points of the case is that that slander has to be taken back. It has to be dealt with. This thing has to be, I have to be made whole here. I can't go through the rest of my career with this statement standing in the minutes of a meeting. And yet it still is standing in the minutes of a meeting. And because I tried to get them to redress that, they are now countersuing me, saying that, you know, that I don't have the right to do that, that they are the citizen, and that not only are they protected from criticizing me, they could criticize me all they want and say, well, we don't agree with you, we don't like you, whatever, your hair is ugly, that's fine, right? But when you slander me, that's a different thing. And they're saying that because they did slander me, and because they have the right to engage in government, and because I've now brought this claim against them for slander, I'm responsible for their legal bills. It's absolutely, it turns the whole law upside down and puts all of us in a very scary position. Because now, I mean, I'm thinking about the CTU a lot lately, the Chicago Teachers Union, because they're putting up a hell of a fight, and I'm so proud and I'm so hopeful that they're going to win something good for all of us. And imagine a teacher going before, the school board and saying, you know, we really hope that the school will do a better job next year in, you know, supporting X program. And the board comes back and says, well, you better watch yourself because you're a child rapist, and so you better watch what you say. And then she has to sit there and take that, because if she defends herself, she'll have to pay their legal tab, which they will inflate greatly, as the Northeastern has done. They're saying they've spent $80,000 on that one claim. That's what the judge, has the right to say, I have to write a check for. Now, that will silence all criticism of the government, all criticism, because what citizen is going to put themselves forward to be called a felony sex criminal if they question what's going on, and then they can't get that redressed? They can't say, no, I'm not, and you can't say that about me because it's not true. Because if they make that claim, you can't say that about me because it's not true, then you violated the Citizens Protection Act, because now the government is a citizen, just like a corporation is a person, therefore you're liable. It is a very scary precedent. I cannot believe that this judge has made this decision, but she did, and we are going to do our best to appeal it and get it overturned, because to leave that standing as precedence is just unacceptable. It's unacceptable.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the support network that you've had and the network of people who have been rallying to this entire array of struggles with regards to Northeastern that you've wound yourself facing. Tell us a little bit about how big it is, what the support has been like, and how this has helped you to fight back.
Well, it's been humbling. It's been amazing. I've been struggling with this so long that it's just unfortunately become a part of my life. And to see this group develop and pull together people who are serious about protecting free speech and academic freedom has just been amazing and remarkable. And I'm incredibly grateful. As I said before, the AAUP is supporting my case with the National AAUP. One of the people who's been organizing this Justice for Loretta campaign is a professor at the University of Vermont, and her AAUP chapter is supporting now. They sent a substantial contribution, which has been very helpful in trying to fight back on some of this stuff. And then we've had, a $5 contribution to a $5,000 contribution, it hasn't mattered. You know, just that people care, that people are willing to say, hey, you know what, this matters, and you shouldn't have to fight this alone. This is about all of us. And they send in whatever. I just tear up every time we get any size contribution, because I recognize that this isn't about me. This isn't about one person. This is about our rights as people on this planet, that we should be able to criticize our government, that we should be able to speak, that we should be able to protect our students. We should be able to have a voice and not fear that that voice is going to land us in all kinds of trouble when we're trying to have a positive impact on how things are going, and things are going so badly right now. I think we need every voice out there. And I think others agree, and that's why they've been so supportive. But the network is, you know, several people here in Chicago who meet regularly, to all the way out to, in Vermont, California. We had a nice note and donation this morning from somebody up in Canada, in Ottawa. So it's quite broad, and I'm very grateful.
That was Loretta Capehart. Again, the website mentioned in the interview is justiceforloretta.com. Justice, the numeral 4, Loretta, Loretta.com. Listen to all past episodes of the Ministry of Truth online at www.szcz.org. That concludes this episode of the Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.